welcome to another episode of You Missed It! I'm Andrew, and today we watched... I'm joined by my regular crew, actually, which is from my left, Alex, Jack, Rylan, and Zach. Yes, thank you for that. Today we watched a movie called Indie Game The Movie. I'll give you a little bit of background on that, but first, let me shill us. Here you go. So if you want to find us, head over to SoundCloud. You get us at You Missed It Podcast. And pretty much, You Missed It everywhere else. No, not really. I'm lying. It's just You Missed It on Facebook and iTunes. It's at YMI_podcast on Twitter and the Instas. And if you want to find us on YouTube, it's You Missed It Podcast. Oh, we're also on Spotify. Yeah.
We gotta make a
under
damn
You
jingle.
Missed It, I believe. Or is it You Missed It Podcast, Jack?
It's You Missed It.
It's like user underscore 2564.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Are we more complicated?
No, that's our email, man.
Yeah. Y underscore M underscore I big butts at...
So you big let Zach do it?
Yeah, I set the original.
Yeah, well, Zach set that one up, obviously.
We need to set up a rap song for this.
Oh, I'll be totally down to have like a background jingle, just kind of
like a pokey rap.
We have
our
we have our sponsor jingle, you know, like welcome to You Missed It. Now a word from our sponsors. Do, do, do,
do, do, do, but it's do, all for social media.
Yeah, of course. And we should make it, Zach. We should record our own original tracks, and then eventually we'll compile a bunch of original beats, and then we can sell this shit, man. Yeah. We can sell music. The You Missed It soundtrack.
But the funny part is everybody will miss it.
That's true. But then we'll have like remixes from dialogues from all of us. So we'll have Alex the SJW track.
Right.
And it'll just be remixes of him just going, I don't like this. And then we'll have
Andrew's. Love the skits.
Yeah, we'll have Andrew's
between.
Cop beat. We'll have a cop breakdown.
Oh, yeah. Cop sirens.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Woo, woo, woo. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll have
that's
Zach.
That's right. That's my bad cop patrol.
Cop yeah.
And then Zach will be the shitty pun track. And then.
Oh, hell yeah.
Fart machine. Yeah. The fart machine is here.
That was the worst fart sound you've ever. What are you doing?
Yeah, that's right. It's sexy.
It's a very
this is
like
why we have
fart.
The fart sound more, because apparently mouth farts are beyond this.
That's
one.
A sexy fart. Or is that one?
No, that's an elevator
fart.
That's
a come over here fart.
That's exactly. An elevator fart. That's like a. Did somebody.
That's a.
I think they did. Who the fuck?
That's a sneaky boy, is what you call
that's
that.
Right.
It silenced
the
creeper.
Deadly.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, Indie Game the Movie is a movie we just watched. It came out back in 2012. So there have been updates to this movie since, which I'll get into with you guys later. But the directors of the film were James Swirsky and Lisanne Pajot, or Paget. She's French Canadian. They're two Canadians that actually kickstarted the film with two successful Kickstarter campaigns, one that got it off the ground and one that helped with completion. Basically, the film just follows, it's just following the struggles of independent game developers, Edmund McMillan and Tommy Refines, not sure how to pronounce his last name, during the development of Super Meat Boy, Phil Fish during the development of Fez, and Jonathan Blow, who's reflecting on the success of his game, Braid. So each one of these, kind of the idea was to give it a past, present, and future. So that's kind of that. You know, you have Jonathan Blow in the past. He's in the past. You have Phil Fish for the future, and they're kind of following Super Meat Boy's development as it's happening and its release. So that's the structure of the film. And the music is by Jim Guthrie. I would like to point that out because I think his music is actually very good. So if you're interested at all, even just checking out his music is kind of pretty cool. Let's start with Alex to my left. What did you think?
I really liked it. I was very interested from the start. Anytime you're doing a documentary, there's a lot of information. I imagine they had 20 hours, because that's pretty excessive. 10 hours of footage, maybe?
They had way more.
Yeah,
so they had like hundreds of hours with a lot of developers, actually, just as background for you. But they actually had way so many more developers than that, indie game developers, but they cut it down to these three to give it that structure because they wanted that.
Okay.
So yeah, it was much. It was probably much more, like I hate to say ambitious. It was less focused. It was a lot broader, and then they focused in on this is how they wanted to present this film.
And that's interesting too, because I thought originally that they were centering on those three people, but you say they went with lots of people.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It was supposed to just highlight indie game development and like kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime there's a documentary film, there's so much information, and the editing really helped it along. I mean, really, really helped the people watching to understand it. Like I said, I was into it from the beginning, and it was a great ride. It was a great understanding into indie game film, indie game development, and I'm glad you picked this film, because this is something I probably never would have thought of to look into myself. But I could liken it to making a movie, like indie film, or just film in general, because you've got all these behind the scenes creative aspects that you got to go through, and film distribution as well, like they were saying with Walmart and Steam and Microsoft, like those are the big distributors. Well, Steam and Microsoft, but with Walmart being a past distributor, as it were.
Yeah.
And all the politics that go on behind that. But now they have this freedom, which is great, because there are a lot of good, talented people out there with a lot of great ideas, and they should be able to get those ideas out and not have to really answer to anyone, which was the case with Super Meat Boy, which was awesome.
Yeah, except for Microsoft. They kind of had to, they were under the thumb of Microsoft a little bit.
Yeah.
Because if Microsoft didn't display them, like didn't give them a platform to be on, then they wouldn't have been successful.
Sure.
Yeah. Especially in the early days. But things have changed since then, actually, quite a bit. So.
Yeah, even just Steam itself. Like, honestly, if you have a game that takes off on Steam, I mean, oh my God.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is a whole overcrowdedness issue, though, that people talk about, is that especially if you have a free platform that anybody can get on, people start putting out a bunch of junk, kind of like how if you remember the video game crash, Nintendo just had a lot of what do they call it, like bloatware. They had a lot of bloatware.
Yeah, they basically the whole thing about it was like in the early 80s, and they basically, it was more about quantity than quality at the time.
Oh yeah,
just get as much out as possible because people will buy it. But then eventually the quality really started to dip, and people were like, we're just buying shit.
Before the NES.
And this is like the game that really tanked it is the most considered E.T., which is considered E.T. the video game, which is considered one of the worst video games of all time, because it literally caused the crash. The guy was told to make this game by the holiday release, so he had 5 weeks to develop the game from scratch, and they had produced, I want to say, like 5 million copies for launch, and they only sold like less than a fifth of that.
Yeah, they buried the rest in the desert.
Yeah.
Which was a mess for years.
Yeah,
people thought it was. And then they found out that it was true.
Yeah, they dug them up. They actually exist. That happened. Yeah. So that's stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, no, it does lead to that. It's gone to the point where like Steam also had that problem, where it was just too much shit. Mm-hmm. And they had to curate a lot better. So they've been constantly working on curating content to try and present people with stuff that they would. And you still have that problem. You go on Steam, it's like a bunch of bullshit sometimes.
Oh yeah.
But you know, if you know what you're looking for, and the discerning gamer usually like has an idea, and games media helps with that. But again, it's always tough. Like the platform's there, which is cool, and it's a lot more accessible than it ever has been before. But you know, there's pros and cons with that too. But it is cool that the creative people do have a bit more access now than they used to, and more direct access to the people who play their games.
Yeah. I suppose the developers, if they wanted total freedom, they could release on their own.
Yeah.
They could still have a full-time job and then develop their game bit by bit.
Some people have done that.
During the week and on the weekends.
Yeah.
But it would take a lot longer to release.
Super long.
So having someone finance you so you can put a whole bunch of time into it really helps.
Yes.
And then taking the time to work out all the bugs like Phil was trying to do. He redid the game 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Like, there's so much that goes into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a laborious.
That's for damn sure.
Yeah. Like, it's, I agree that there are a lot of parallels between any kind of creative, like, creative medium out there. So, like, yeah, it relates a lot to people who make films just because, or at least I think it does, because there's so much that goes into it. It's such a labor of love, especially for people who don't have, you know, resources. Mm-hmm. It's so much harder for them. And it's you give so much into it. And I think that's the same across any creative platform. If you're creating something, you pour so much of yourself into it that it's exhausting. And you work way harder than somebody who has like a 40-hour work week, just because you're putting more than what you have to into it. You're putting everything into it, which is obviously a lot more difficult. And you sacrifice a lot more for it.
Yeah, I think Edmund was saying that it would be hell to work at Microsoft because of...
Oh, yeah. It'd be like the corporate...
Any of the big overlord companies.
Or whatever. Yeah. The funny part is they work you just as hard, though. Yeah, notoriously, like EA, he mentioned EA, too. And they work you fucking hard, but it's not your game.
Well, yeah, that's going to say the freedom aspect is out the window.
Yeah, right? You don't get to take ownership of it. You're just under the banner. So, I feel extra bad for people like that. Yeah, and we've seen a lot of stories come out recently from, like, Rockstar and big developers about how they've been... They mistreat their employees, how there's a culture of crunch, how people are getting worked to the bone and having to sacrifice a lot. And there's no acknowledgement of them, though. There's not that moment where you get to see everything pay off. Yeah. Well, you do, but you don't. It's not your name.
Yeah, in those instances, it's someone else's vision as well, ultimately, when you're working for a big company.
Totally.
Like, and it sounds like they have to work just as hard as these guys in order to make something that's like not even from the heart necessarily.
Yeah.
And also risk getting paid less too when you're, you know, part of a bigger team instead of something that's yours.
Yes.
You know, you don't really reap the benefits as much.
Yeah, you don't get this, like, if it succeeds really well, you don't get as much as just a developer who works for them. You still get a paycheck. Like, I think they get some bonuses and stuff like that if it does well.
I would hope so.
But it's not the same. Like, if you're Phil Fish, you put out a game and it sells really well, you get the lion's share of that money.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously there's other people that money goes to as well. But with like EA, like they're getting all the money. And then you just get your regular salary plus a bonus, right? Which is like for the amount of time you're putting into it and of your life that you're putting into the game, not worth it, you know? Like, I don't know. I guess that's subjective, but a lot of people find that, you know, it's not sustainable.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But any other thoughts anything else you noticed in there that you have or a question that you have or anything like that?
I like how they built up the stress between Phil's PAX presentation and the release of Super Meat Boy. Well, I would say delayed release on Xbox.
Yeah.
Like, that's so stressful.
Yeah.
And they paralleled that in the film. So then you got to see one do well right away and the other one not so much. But it looks like spoilers that they both did pretty well in the end. Well, Phil's at that point was still kind of open-ended because he hadn't completed it. But the initial, you could say, shareware or test release did pretty well. It tested pretty well, which was great.
It was positive, yeah. He ended up releasing the game. It came out, I feel like it came out in like 20, not long after the movie. Like either 2012 or 2013 it came out. I feel like it came out in 2012. And it was a success. It did really well, actually.
Yeah.
And it was like kind of polished, actually.
Well,
it was pretty well polished. It came out and people loved it. So, no, it was a success. Yeah.
Yeah, anything you do in the entertainment industry, like they said it in the film, you put a lot into it and it's a big risk.
Yeah.
Like Edmund had put in 2 or 3 years and I don't think that guy was over 25 at the time.
He's pretty young.
He was pretty young and it looked like he was going bald. Maybe he shaved his head, but it could be the stress.
Super stress.
Super stress because you're not sleeping.
Both those guys were like,
and Tommy,
to the detriment of your health, kind of stressed. Really stressed.
But it looked like Tommy handled it a lot better because he had someone there with him. Like he was
married.
Like
that, oh, you mean Edmund?
Yeah, right? Edmund. Yeah.
Yeah, Edmund.
Because he was the married one.
Edmund was the married one. Yeah. Yeah. He was the married one. All right, thinning
all
right, here.
Tommy was the one who's like having breakdowns all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was close with his parents.
Yeah, it grates on you, because especially with Tommy, because he wasn't sleeping during the regular night hours that humans should be sleeping. He was sleeping during the day.
Yeah, he was nocturnal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge stress. And making a film is pretty much the same thing, because you're pouring so much of yourself into it. And I think gamers have a little bit, I don't want to say more, but a different kind of creative, not creative control, but they have different responsibilities, because they're coding it, they're drawing it, they're testing it, and they've got all the production stress that goes with that as well.
Yeah.
And that's huge. Now, I'm not saying that's a lot worse than film. Maybe there is a different kind of stress to it, because with film, you have a certain date and you release it, and then, okay, that's it. With a game, you can play it over and over and over again. I know with film you can still do editing, and you've only got so many shots. But with a game, there are so many other things that can go wrong. Like with Phil's, there was a lot of crashes that happened on the PAX floor. Mm. And that's a stress in and of itself, because that's the performance right there.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you never know how it's going to perform. At least, I guess with film, at least like you have the product. When you hit play, it'll play the thing.
Yeah.
Regardless to what, you know, like whether you're happy with the final product or not is a different thing. There are obviously a lot of things that can go wrong in development of it. But once you present it, it's like, I know what's there. That's true. In games, I guess, when you're done, you're like, I don't know once it's in the wild if it's going to have a complete fucking meltdown or not. Because it's running in real time. This is all code running in real time. This is a game engine. This is something that can break very easily. At least, I guess, with film, it won't break. Once it's out there, it is the way it is, for better or for worse.
I mean, there's a bit of that, actually.
Like, that's not the case.
Yeah, but I was going to say that. No, actually, that happens, like, all the time in film, where it's just like, oh, I think I got everything, and then it's like something fucks up, and it's
well, I didn't mean that. What I'm saying is that once you put it out there, once it's out, once it's done, once you've, like, if you have a video file, or you've sent it out there, if you have a film, and you say hit play, it's going to play what you.
But then you notice stuff, and you're like, oh shit.
Oh yeah, like things that you missed, sure.
Either things that things that you missed. But
here's the thing.
Yeah.
Like the thing. You could like play the game, it'll play perfectly, and because it's playing differently each time, somebody's playing it, you know, stressing it in a different way, things that you couldn't have tested for, so it's out of your control, I think, is the way that I
it's a little more intricate is what you're saying,
because at least like if it's it's something you put out there, it was in your control, but obviously not everybody's perfect, they can't fix everything before they put it out, obviously. But with a game, you could like have been like, this was fine, put it out there, and then somebody does something that breaks it, and you're like, I couldn't have tested for that, I had no way to know that, and it bugs the shit out of you gotta patch it now, you gotta find a way to fix it after the fact, it's already out.
Like a film, like you can like go back and fix your mistakes. For like code, you can go back, if you stumble across a mistake, you can go back and fix it, and sometimes that correction in the code can spring off a whole bunch of other new bugs that then need to be corrected. So it can, one little mistake can set you back hours or days of work sometimes to work backwards and fix everything. It's very difficult to make it much more difficult to make it airtight.
I agree, they're just different. I think that they have the same stresses, it's just one's like longer, goes on for longer. You could be fixing a game for like a year after release if it's fucked up. Whereas if a film releases, it's just fucked up forever. So, you know, like that's it. It's fucked up. So like, I feel like it's different. At least you can fix it. See, that's the upside to it, I guess, as if you're in game development, is that you can, especially with the internet, you can fix things now. It's not like the old school when it's on a cartridge, it's done forever.
But on the flip side of that too, there seems, especially with the big developers now, there seems to be like a much more of a we'll fix it after release, post-release mentality.
That pisses me off with releases nowadays.
That's a major problem.
It's like, we're going to give you the bare bones of the game. We actually are still developing it. And we're just going to give you pieces, so it's like you buy the whole thing, but then you're like, we're gonna release the full game coming,
we're gonna release it broken and we'll fix it later because we had to release
it all the time
because investors said we had to release it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
too fucking bad, right? And that's the worst part. I think I just heard that about just recently Battlefield 5. They just dropped. Yeah. It's just dropping, but it's a little fucked.
Yeah.
Like the multiplayer is a little fucked, but they're gonna fix it. So then even the reviewers are like, just come back and like.
It tells
a month
when it's
or
ready.
So.
Yeah.
No, they're like, come back and it's hard to rate this because right now it's not super. It's there, but it's not perfect. There's problems because of bugs and things. But in a month, we know it's going to be polished off and it's going to be great. So maybe hold off for a month or a couple months and then buy it.
But they that should, release date, man, you got to stick with that release date most of the time.
It's a whole. It's investors, right? It's money. That's the problem. Is they really want to just. They have to have it out for investors for quarters to hit those financial it's all fucking greedy ass shit.
Yeah.
It's the only reason.
Yeah. Which is why like even those indie developers were stressed by that because they had to hit a deadline or else they couldn't get their
exactly.
You know, we can't end up on the spotlight page, then we're fucked because then we won't get as many sales.
And that's where 100-hour work weeks come from.
Yeah. Crunch. Yeah.
Sorry, Jack, I interrupted you.
Oh, sorry, Jack. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's all good.
Yeah, why don't you tell us what you thought?
No, it's my turn. this was a lot to take in with this one, actually. What I said about the last movie we saw, which was Europa, I had mentioned that I didn't really have any emotional connection with this film. It was a very objective looking, just kind of, oh, this is neat.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't entertained or anything like that. The exact opposite with this film. I was just emotionally invested because you guys were just bringing up now that there are a lot of parallels with indie gamers and indie filmmakers, indie musicians, indie whatever. It's that the same feelings, the same fears, the same depressed thoughts and anxiety. It goes like anything that they were saying and feeling, I have felt that and have thought that and have gone through that myself many times. The whole idea about him, like, you know, saying I've redone the game 3 times. So it's like, yeah, that reminds me of the time I recolor corrected my entire feature film 4 times. Over the course of like 2 years, just because I would look at it once and then leave and then look at it again and go, I hate this, I want this to look
and then
better.
You get better, right? That's what he was saying, is like, oh, I started out, I wasn't so good, and then I got better at it, so it's like, fuck, I have to redo it because I'm better now.
Because you can be your own worst critic and your own worst enemy, and you just want to nitpick it and polish it because, and that's funny too, problems that you see and that you stress and critique over, sometimes the audience will never notice it.
And then the opposite, too.
And then they'll notice something completely different, or they're focused on something that you're like, why the hell are you focusing on this so much? You're not. And they brought that up with one of the game developers, how he was just so angry that they were focusing on these portions of his game, but not what he was trying to get across.
Yeah, Jonathan Blow.
Yeah, which is like, it's kind of, that's ego filling you in there. Like you know, you put so much thought and heart and energy into something, and you want your audience to also experience what you experience. But what most artists and creators got to know is that once it's out there, it's going to be interpreted by a million different ways. It's never going to be, no one's ever going to have the same idea as you had. They're going to bring up new things. They're going to bring up things that you would never would have thought of. And to me, that's more fascinating. I like it when somebody can read into something in a project that makes me go, I would never have thought of that. But that's interesting. I like that. So some people don't like it. Some people get offended by it. So I'm the opposite. I like hearing different interpretations and different ideas that I would never have thought of. I thought in terms of a documentary, this was really well done. This had a actual clear narrative. I feel like a lot of documentaries, at least some of the ones I've seen recently, are more just information. What is this about? I don't know. It's just there's no real plot. What are you trying to, what's the story? Because in the end it's a movie and you gotta bring the audience in. You establish a beginning, middle, and end, which this movie did really well. I was never like lost or felt like it was just talking down to me, particularly with gaming developing and all that. And that's another thing too with this particular film, like I love just seeing behind the scenes. I love seeing things being made, obviously, with some of the projects I've brought up for this show, like Ed Wood. You know, I am obsessed and I love just seeing the craftsmanship of anything. To me, that is way more interesting than the final product for me most of the time. That's why I love making stuff. That's why I love editing. That's why I love shooting. And then seeing it come together can be really satisfying. And then when it clicks and it works, and then you put it in front of an audience, like, it's a drug getting feedback, whether it's negative or good. It's something that is what every artist and creator strives for, is just getting that feedback. And I do understand, like, yeah, I'm making this for myself. It's my own personal project. And yeah, just, I totally relate to that. It's anyone in the creative field and anything can relate to this, to these game developers. And you know, you can get depressed, and at times I was like, this is so fucking depressing, because I've gone through all this shit. And then some guys, you're like, you know, some things that you've moved past, you know, those old fears, like, yeah, I don't really care about that, because I don't care what people say online, because in the end, you're not going to please everyone. There's going to be somebody. And then the whole thing is like, I'm waiting for that first person to tell me this sucks, so it brings me back down to earth.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like that too. I was just like, I'm just waiting for someone to tell me, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you putting it like this? This is dog shit. You know, I'm always like that too. I'm waiting for that too. So yeah, there's just a lot I can, you know, connect with. There's a lot I can relate to. And yeah, it's just fascinating just seeing, you know, the bullshit that they have to put themselves through. And I must say that they go through, it's bullshit that we as the artist, the creator, put our own selves through. We almost have to torture ourselves to feel like we have to get this thing done. You know, we see how different people react to it. Like the one who has a wife and has a crutch, you know, his life is a little bit more settled. He's not freaking out. He's enjoying it. Whereas the one who's decided, I have to live alone, I have to be a hermit, he's the most depressed. He's the one freaking out. He's the one who's kind of almost ready to explode, or
he's got nothing else to distract himself.
Exactly. So his whole world is just the game. And to me, it's also a cautionary tale for those who do want to get into independent, you know, creating your own art, is that you have to, each one's different, but you got to find a way to where it doesn't destroy yourselves mentally, because it is a dangerous drug to think that if I don't get this thing done, then I have to kill myself, because it was just a waste for 2 years. And I'm just like, I felt that in the past. It's unhealthy. It's one of those things where, like, look, there's just going to be another project. Don't feel like the world's going to crash down. And, you know, if you don't make this, you're a failure. It's like, no, failure's fine, because then the next one, and then the next one, you can improve upon it. You can, like, okay, it's taking you 5 years to make this game, overly ambitious, maybe do something that, you know, still gives you artistic, you know, you still enjoy the making of it, but like it doesn't grind you, it doesn't kill you, you know. And that's the whole thing, like, use what you got, use your resources. So as a filmmaker, like, I can write a great story that takes place in outer space, but can I film in outer space? No. Can I make it look good in outer space? No. So why should I stress and try and make outer space work when I can just do something in my living room that could be equally great? You know, it's like, you gotta sometimes work with what you have and be realistic. You know, some of the other things they're saying, like, I want to have like a million likes and a million views and all that stuff. It's like, just be happy with one for now. Because when you do get it, success, when you weren't striving for millions, it feels so good. Mm-hmm. When you push yourself and try to hit that goal and you don't reach it, then any success doesn't.
It feels like a failure.
You're setting yourself up to fail. And unfortunately, a lot of people self-destruct and they completely collapse because they, you know, they work themselves up into a shoot.
It was unnerving, like, how, like, nonchalant that one guy was, just like, just so matter of fact, like, yep, I'm gonna have to kill myself if this doesn't work.
Phil's pretty extreme in general online and everywhere. He had problems even after Fez. So Fez came out and it was totally over ambitious for a project like that small, for a team that small, but it came out and it kind of lived up to that. I believe, like a lot of people believe, it lived up to that expectation, just because it was full of secrets and tiny things, and people were like, you had to write shit down to like find something. It was like old school gaming. He really came through on what he was trying to develop. It was just super cool. But he continued that unhealthy kind of mentality and everything as he continued, because he still had that company, right? And he made other games after. I think, I can't remember what the news story was, but recently he like just quit. He's like, I'm done. I'm canceling everything. Like, he was making, oh yeah, Fez 2. He was making a sequel. And nope. He's like, nuh-uh, I'm done. Like, I think it was like one article or something. It just, he cares very, very deeply about what other people think. And it eventually led to him, at least where he's at now, as far as I know, to him just not being able to take it anymore.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
And then I get that. Some people just can't handle it. You know, yeah. It just, they feel like, oh, if I don't please everyone, then what's the point?
Yeah.
To me, it's getting a reaction in general at all. And I don't care if it's a yay or a boo. If you get somebody to actually put time and effort to just react to what you made, you've done your job.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, and you just take the feedback as is. You can, you know, for try and silence the obviously destructive, like, fuck you, this is terrible, all that stuff. Like, you can ignore that and just focus on the constructive part, the constructive criticism, which is what I do. I ignore anything that's like just trollish or anything that says,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's like, okay, you're just being an asshole just to be an asshole, and that's fine. There's gonna be people like that, and those people says, I wasn't prepared for all this shit. It's like, dude, you gotta prepare yourself for that kind of thing. And
sometimes you put something out there, right?
Yeah, and like I've put out stuff, and the feedback you get are just like, you read some of the comments, you're like, oh, I'm surprised you would put this much time and thought into how you want me to die.
Yeah.
But at the same time, someone's watching your product, and then you read down another comment, and somebody says the exact opposite. And you're like, okay.
And then sometimes the bad things too, I mean, you know, can be almost constructive criticism, right?
Yeah.
And that's the best stuff, because then if you identify with it and you're like, oh yeah, you know, I could have done that better. Then it just helps you overall. That's the best stuff, really.
Yeah.
Because someone telling you, oh, it's just good, it's like, that's great and thanks, but that's as far as it goes, realistically.
Yeah. Like, you always want to grow. You always want things to get better. You always want to, you know, you should never be satisfied at all. Like, George Lucas once said that films are never completed, they're abandoned. And I feel like that's with a lot of projects. People eventually just, they got to let go and move on.
Yeah.
You're not going to make your ultimate masterpiece. If you focus on trying to make the ultimate masterpiece,
you're
going to
become
fail.
George Lucas.
Exactly.
You'll never come back. Yeah.
Exactly. So sometimes you just got to take what you've learned, take what you've gathered, just see how they react to it, and then take what you've learned and gathered and put it into the next project.
Yeah.
And then the next project. If you love doing what you're doing, then you will keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You won't just say, I'm going to do this, and if I don't do it, I'm quitting. It's like, then you really don't like what you're doing. If you feel like you can't accept failure.
Yeah.
It's like, you have to go into anything knowing that you're going to fail at some point. And, you know, either you learn from it or you don't. So but overall, I love this movie. I thought it was fantastic.
Awesome to hear, man. What about you, Rylan? What did you think?
Yeah, I really liked it too. I mean, it's cool to have a documentary featured on this show, and offers a little bit of insight into a world that I have very little firsthand experience in. I certainly don't make video games, and I don't even play them that much, because they, honestly, I get panicky and stressed out and irrationally angry when I play them, so I prefer, I'm like the only person I've ever met who likes to sit and watch other people play video games.
That's actually a lot of
I was going to say.
Just look on YouTube for example.
Yeah, I was going to say, I even do that myself.
Yeah. No, I do too. Just less,
yeah,
like
it's some, fun.
Yeah.
And I also did it for the entirety of Super Smash Bros. Check us out on YouTube.
Fair enough.
Well, people, interesting people, it's fun to watch interesting people playing games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, it's the whole thing, getting a reaction, and with video games, you don't, especially as a developer, you rarely get that instant feedback. See, with like music and film, you have an audience, and you can get like live feedback. With gaming, it's very much you have to go online and search for feedback and search for reactions. And obviously with YouTube and the internet, that's obviously become basically its own niche market.
Yep. And that's what developers do. I guarantee, like, on record, they go and they watch other people playing their games, and it's just like super cathartic, because they're like, oh my god.
Yeah, there's a reason
they're playing
why,
my thing.
There's a reason why game developers don't mind having their whole game on YouTube, because those help sell.
Unless you're Nintendo.
Yeah, fuck Nintendo.
Yeah.
Nintendo's not an independent game developer.
Sorry, Nintendo of or Japan. Nintendo Japan, yeah. Nintendo Japan. Nintendo of America apparently is more, they're more into internet culture, but whatever. Anyway.
But yeah, no, the whole story, like Alex and Jack were saying, the story was laid out really nicely. Like I was invested. The tone was consistent as it was switching between the three stories. So like when things were getting tense, they were like getting tense for everyone. And then when things kind of started to wrap up, it did for everybody as well. So like you didn't have to like mentally and emotionally switch back and forth between the kind of the three running storylines, which was nice. It made it very easy to just kind of sit back and just kind of enjoy and experience it a little bit what these guys were going through as well. And yeah, really, you just kind of get to see, get a little glimpse into their lives, and you recognize that this is a labor of love, just like any other creative project. And I mean, even today, there's still some debate as to whether video games count as art at any capacity, or the creation of video games should be taken seriously. And even like 6, 7, 8 years ago, this was even a hotter topic then. But it's little glimpses like this one that kind of helped to put that argument to rest, I believe, because you're watching the toll and that is this is taking on these people and their mental health and their well-being and the effort and blood, sweat, tears and passion that is going into the creation of these games. And it's like, well, it clearly they take it just as seriously as does any artist in any creative capacity.
I think it was Roger Ebert actually who infamously said video games could never be art. He spoke in an absolute, which you should know never to do.
Especially Roger absolutes. Ebert.
Damn
it, George Lucas, stop. No more. I don't know why he said. Why he said that. I mean, well, I can't remember the context behind it.
It's probably video game movies mostly.
He had been saying that video games are not art.
Yeah, because people were trying to tell him.
Till the day he died.
Yeah.
Well, then he's just like an old
man. People were trying to show him.
Pretty much. That's what I take from that.
Yeah. People were trying
to show
him.
He's just an old man.
Games that are like from an art house kind of perspective were like on par with some films, right, in terms of storytelling. Mm-hmm. like
Europa,
it's depth. He was just an old man about it, I guess. He's just kind of like never be.
There were times, and just what's so funny, it's like, yo dude, you know, there was back in the day where like
people said the same shit about movies,
same thing about what anything new, anything that's
television
out there. Yeah, it's like, this isn't art, this is just Nickelodeon crap or whatever. It's like, oh, come on, man.
Well, television for years was even under that. I mean, it was so like, oh, movies are definitely number one. And television is just this
you're
crap.
A TV star.
Yeah, and that's what it was for years until recently. Yeah. Really.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, we've hit a golden age, and now it's considered a lot more.
It's on even level playing field.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
People are a lot of times more invested in the TV shows and characters than
absolutely.
They are in the bloody movies. Yeah.
Well, I was listening to an older episode where Jack, you were talking about like the Oscars coming down to the Emmys level at some point. Like if people don't go out to theaters and such anymore. Yeah. But I think it's you're kind of already starting to see that equality, but it's the Emmys coming up to the Oscars level.
I would say
level.
It's more the Emmys going up to Oscar level in terms of importance, in terms of, because it's just like the amount of money and the amount of time and also the people committing to long form stories. It's even in films that's spreading with, you know, cinematic universes. They're basically, those are just sort of like answers to television shows,
multiple sequels
or just all the in universes, so you can cut back and forth and just get as much mileage out of your product as possible, because it used to be just one out there, done, move on to the next one. But you know, fan bases can be very lucrative
because
that's what today is in terms of Hollywood. It's fan bases. What has a fan base? Because that will print money. But the thing is like, they'll go to any fan base or any product and thinks it's going to print as much money as, say, a more popular one. but you know, you gotta actually make a good product in the end.
That's the thing, right?
Well, I mean, look at like video game movies. Yep. Like at their track record though. Yep. Like maybe it just kinda goes to show that video games are meant to be video games. It's not like, okay, we're gonna take this video game and refine it into film. It's higher art form. It's finally realizing its true potential. No, its true potential was back there in the console where you could maximize what it was meant to be.
Yeah, I think if you're going to make a film based on a video game franchise, you have to do your own thing with it. You can't just take the ideas from the video game and try to just adapt it to film.
Yeah.
You have to take the core concepts and build your own story around it. But that's the only way it'll work.
But then the fan base will get mad because you didn't respect the source material.
Fuck them. Fuck them, dude. They're, you know what? If you listen to gamers all the time... then you would make, just look at fucking like Twilight Princess. That was Nintendo listening to Zelda fans.
Yeah,
and
it was
like, meh. And then they made fucking like Wind Waker just before that. And that's considered like a cult masterpiece.
Yeah, people were like, what are you doing? This is not Zelda. Oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah, fuck it. Just trust the developers, man.
It like, happens all the time. Filmmakers. Like just because fans bitch about a direction you're taking, in the end, like, yeah, they can bitch about it, but wait till they actually see it. Wait till they actually experience it. And then... hear them out. Don't just like an announcement shouldn't define the direction of where you should go or how you should react to it. Oh, the audience didn't like this. They should make it brighter or more poppy because that's how you get people into the movie. No, just in the end, it's you're not making something for an audience in terms of like you listen to the audience. No, as a creator, you're giving something to an audience.
Yeah.
You're not just trying to make something for the audience. Mm. You're saying, here's what I'm making. How you react to it is up to you.
Yeah.
That's really it.
This is what we think is best, and we're passionate about it.
You find customers. The customers don't go to you and tell you how you should make your product. Yeah. You know, that's the whole thing about, like, I'll bring up Star Wars. These fans saying, you have to make sure the Star Wars matches how the fans want it. We got to do it by committee. You got to pass it by everyone. I was like, yo, guys, come on. It's just like you don't own the product. The creator does.
Last Jedi reboot.
They feel so invested in it that they want that they feel like a sense of ownership.
Entitlement.
Yeah, it's entitlement. Yeah, but I think for games, the big thing is... So if you look at Netflix, they've actually had more success adapting video games. Like, there's a Castlevania series that's apparently really good.
It's the most successful. It's considered like the most successful video game in terms of like... I guess critical.
Yeah. And they did their own thing with it, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, the thing is that's a benefit to Netflix. They're like, well, we just make a lot of shit and we give creatively, like, you can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're not going to rein you in. We're not going to force you into any kind of a box. And they actually have a Witcher series coming out that they've already started filming that already looks like people are already, video gamers are already bitching about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From a still image of, they actually got Henry Cavill as Geralt.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the main character. And the still image of him, and they're like, they're already complaining, and it's like, just shut the fuck up. They're gonna put it out. It's gonna be different.
Yeah.
You're either gonna hate it, but you watch, it'll get its own bigger audience.
I'm actually looking forward to that because he's apparently a big fan, Henry
Cavill. Yeah, Henry Cavill.
He's a big fan of that series, so you know, if that's never a bad thing.
It's never a bad thing. I think that you need it to, but again, like I think you need to watch out where. The people making it or writing it,
of course.
If they're big fans, like not to be too derivative to try and create something brand new.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think, the Netflix stuff, like I'm confident, a little confident that they might be able to pull it. They might be able to pull it off as opposed to Hollywood.
Well, and that's the thing. Like Hollywood doesn't have a great track record with video game movies and adaptations, but we have seen plenty online. Great adaptations. Like, you know, Zach's a minority in this, but the first two Mortal Kombat movies were mixed, particularly the second one.
Yeah.
But then wasn't
the second one was mixed?
The first one. The second one's dog shit. Yeah. But then you had wasn't there like a YouTube series and it was like holy shit.
Oh,
great.
Yeah. Oh, that one, the fan one.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And they're like there are like
I heard that was good.
Yeah. And there's a Sonic movie or a show coming out. Like
I heard about that.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. And there is one coming out, and then
there's a Zelda show coming out.
That's a Netflix deal. Yeah,
you've got Detective Pikachu now coming out.
That looks kind of fucking crazy. Cool because it's its own thing. Yeah, I was like, man, it's weird,
it is
but
weird.
I'm digging it.
Oh no, it is weird. I was just when I first heard that, I was like, okay. And then I saw the trailer, I was like, okay.
It's like, yeah. this should be absolute garbage, but it looks like it might be
but
okay.
But they're not aping anything from Pokemon universe, you know? Like, they're doing their own weird thing, and I'm like, okay.
It's funny, too, because, spoiler alert, I'm not a huge fan of Ryan Reynolds, but... Again,
God,
I'm like,
Deadpool, man.
Well, Deadpool's great. No, I have all the things I've said, okay, they casted the right guy to play this. Don't fuck this up for me, Ryan Reynolds. And he didn't, thank God. And he's the voice of Pikachu. And he won me over again, saying, like, oh my God, you can hear me? I'm so lonely. When I heard that,
right.
I'm sold. I'm
yeah,
like,
oh. You're seeing that come out of Pikachu's mouth. You can't help but love it. You
know? I know. I'm just like, all right, I'm good.
I think Jack's just realizing that he loves Ryan Reynolds.
No.
So he's going to go back to Green Lantern and be like, let's go. Let's go.
Even Ryan Reynolds hates Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah, but Jack will love it. He'll love it because he loves Ryan Reynolds, and the love is unconditional.
See, here's the thing about me and Ryan Reynolds. If we ever did work together, we might actually have a great relationship because I'll be upfront with him. I won't just suck his dick. I'll be like, hey, smart up. don't be Ryan Reynolds. Act.
Oh, damn.
Yeah,
he's just kind of a smart ass, you know?
Yeah.
That's what he always does. So when he actually does something different, I'm like, oh, good for you. But that's why Deadpool is like perfect for him because he doesn't really have to act.
Damn, dude. It's so hard.
But he does a great job. He did a good job.
Yep.
Yeah, he's quipping most of the time, which is the character. So
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so I wonder about this. But yeah, like, tons of series coming out.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Video games are kind of, I feel like they're finding life on Netflix, which is really cool.
Yeah, well, Netflix, again, like, hi, Netflix, you're green light. You're green lit.
Yeah. Nintendo is making really cool moves with Universal now. Honestly, like,
yeah.
The deals, I feel like it's a whole new young generation coming into Nintendo and saying, hey, this is how we need to do things to be successful. And I think that they're doing it pretty well, like, because they're branching out. Mm-hmm. They're finally not just hoarding their shit like they have for so many decades. Now they're being like, hey, if we want, you know, creative payoff, then we should, you know, be a little more generous, give a little more rope, let people do what they want to do.
Yeah, well, I don't blame Nintendo for being so antsy about it because the first time that they ever gave out a property was Super Mario Brothers, and it was awful. So since then, they were like, yeah, we're never going to
be... Well, and that, what was it? Oh, fuck, that Zelda thing? The Zelda...
Oh!
What was it? It was so...
The
excuse!
ROM.
Oh, the cartoon?
Oh, the cartoon, yeah. Well, there was also the Super Mario Brothers cartoon show as well, and Captain N, the Game Master.
Right.
All those video game shows, and like, there was a bunch of animated shows.
It's a different time.
Sonic the Hedgehog, two Sonic the Hedgehog animated shows. Yeah. One was bad, one was good.
I was going to say, I thought there was one that I watched that I liked. But
yeah, no, there was the serious one. The more like, oh shit, this is dead serious.
Yeah.
I remember watching that. There's also Sonic Underground with like Sonic's three kids, and they're like a rock band in the future.
What?
I watched that shit.
Zach, were you talking about the Zelda games for the CDI?
That's what I was talking about.
The unholy trinity.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, giving them
with
the
horrible animation. Woo! Oh my god, made the show look high quality.
That was that. No.
Yeah, yeah.
The excuse me, princess. That was
No. There's the CDI games,
there's an animated
but there was an
show
actual animated series, Legend of Zelda, and it had the most annoying Link going, "Excuse me, princess."
Ah, fuck. Netflix do way better.
I
please
hope so.
God, do better.
Yeah. No, I do. Like,
I want a good Zelda.
Ryan Reynolds as Link.
Oh, that would be bad. Actually,
he just talks the whole time.
Don't
let
fucking Link talk.
Let's get
Zac
Efron to play Link, but play it exactly like the cartoon Link. I think he'd be perfect for that.
Except that he's playing Ted Bundy, and that'd be kind of weird.
Ooh, actually, that's not too bad.
Do you not know that?
No, I've known about it. Thanks for the reminder. I was like, oh yeah, he is playing Ted Bundy.
Yeah, that's like gonna be. It'd probably be like around the same time or just before, because. Yeah, that movie, I know they started filming it.
Yeah.
It'll probably be out sometime next year, I would say at the earliest.
Yeah, no, that should be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he looks a lot like him.
Well, no, that once you jog my memory, it's like, oh, yeah, oh, he'd be perfect for that, because that's the whole thing about the whole Ten Buddies. Like, he's a handsome guy.
Yeah, he's
a nice
guy
looking guy, and he will murder you.
Yeah, pretty much.
You.
All right.
Doesn't look like creepy pedo, therefore not a creeper. Right?
That's right. You could trust Ryan Reynolds, couldn't you?
Right? If movies have taught me anything, it's that only ugly people are bad guys.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, Zach.
Yes.
What do you think?
Video games.
Do you like video games?
Time to time, you know, a good time.
Yeah.
Video games.
Yeah. Do you play indie games?
From time to time, you know, get all steamy.
Yeah, do you like Steams?
Yeah, I like to get steamed up.
Yeah. Do you like the Steam sales?
Oh, you betcha. Saw me in the summer? That's Get right. on that summer Steam sale?
But don't forget Woo! To pay full price for the indie games to support the developers.
That's true.
That's right.
But I mean, you know, if I want to get steamy, I'm going to get a whole bunch of them games. I'm going to be like, I want to put a bunch in a bunch of pockets.
Just big time developers that don't need your money. You know?
You know, depending. Or maybe I'll just hit up a bunch of indie ones, get in all their pockets. Be like, here's a bit for you. It's like when you go to feed the birds, you know?
Just a breadcrumb?
Yeah, you just give all the breadcrumbs.
Pop into my...
Yes. Or the one time where I threw like a cheese puff to one of the ducks and I almost choked it by accident.
Wow. You are a monster.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, you know, they have a hard time.
You don't feed them bread either, man.
Well, no, it wasn't bread, though. It was like a cheese ball. It was like this big.
They can't chew.
They don't chew, man.
Yeah, it's like trying to bring it down and two other ducks had to come over and help it break it down.
Oh my God.
I was like, whew. I was like six. Almost like murdered a duck.
Oh my God.
It was a good time.
Wow. You're fucked up. What? Anyway.
So this was interesting because for this doc, I was watching it, and in the beginning I wasn't quite sure what to make of it because like I saw it going along and things like that, and I was like, okay, so this is what it is. It's not particularly a subject that I'm super interested in about, like, you know, game development and stuff like that. It's just not up my alley. Even though I like video games and stuff like that, I'm not really interested in the, I guess, behind the scenes
the
as much.
Creative process. Of
so yeah. So as it was going along, I was kind of like, okay, I don't really know. But then, as kind of, I guess, the tensions kind of were brewing into it, and you were kind of seeing the stress and how it was affecting them and the process that they had to go through and the sacrifices they had to make and stuff like that. And then when it was hitting the climaxes of, like, you know, Phil's game, like, you know, having all the crashes on the floor and stuff like that. That stuff particularly was really good. Like, I liked kind of Phil Fish,
yeah.
His whole, you know, his whole kind of through line, like his story,
like
I really liked.
Downs.
Yeah, I thought his was the most compelling. And I think partially because, I mean, to be fair, like, you know, Super Meat Boy, I kind of knew was a huge hit. So
yes.
It's like, okay, well, I know they're going to be fine. Like, I know that at the end, it's going to be this massive hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how they're going to end up. But even with them, I like the dynamic and how you could kind of see how they were really good. And, like, before we were saying, like, oh, you know, how, like, Phil and stuff, like, you were saying he quit, I guess, because he was so negatively affected.
Recently, not that long ago.
Right. But then, like, Tommy, like, one of the two guys who were part of the Super Meat Boy crew, he said earlier in the film that, like, you know, I don't care if, like, the reviews are horrible and stuff like that. I just want to see what they say and, you know, take from that what you will kind of thing. And I think that's a good dynamic to have. I think not letting that get to you. And I think they just had, both of those guys had a good dynamic that you could kind of see them as a good power team. And I think that's how, you know, they were able to effectively put out a great game in the end. They were able to put a lot of work in and get that done. And then I guess the other guy, the guy who had been, you know, already had success, I guess.
Yeah, and, Jonathan Blow.
Yeah, and he was saying, like, he was affected by... you know, the backlash and stuff like that. Or not backlash,
it,
but...
It was the reception to his game.
Right,
that really affected him. Yeah, because he was just so... He had his vision for it. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Didn't want to really compromise that, I guess.
Yeah, and that was... Yeah, and that was a bit interesting, too. But, yeah, I mean, overall, like I liked... I didn't love it, because it did take me, you know, a bit to get into it. Yeah, but once I got into it, then I was like, oh, this is, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah,
the video games and stuff, but yeah, it wasn't really like a subject that I was particularly interested in from the get-go. And I find just generally, like, when I'm going to watch, like, a documentary,
docs live and die by the subject matter.
Usually if I'm going for a documentary, it's like, oh, the subject matter really interests me. I want to see this doc. So if I'm going into a movie where I'm not really interested
That's
in
fair.
Subject matter, it's a hard sell right from the get-go.
That's very true. Most documentaries, you know, they're made for that audience who's going to watch it. You know, it's very rare to see a documentary film do well in the box office because you know, usually it's just a niche audience who will watch it. It's not a much like indie gaming. It's very personal, very much, you know, a personal tale or whatever, and only those who are aware of the story or in it will really get the most out of it. You know, that's why I like these, you know, the two highest grossing documentaries, Let me say, I think this is still correct.
Michael Moore.
I was going to say
Are the two Michael Moore films, yeah. Friday Night 9/11 and Bowling for Columbine.
Sure.
And I know Inconvenient Truth also did well.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
But that's about it in terms of high-grossing, you know,
that's
money.
That's a pretty universal subject matter, though, yeah. Like where everybody's got an opinion on it.
Well, yeah.
It's different. Like, video game development is not exactly...
Exactly. Yeah. So,
and Michael Moore's got a name. I mean, let's be honest.
He built the name, yeah. To be fair. Yeah. So.
And he had his whole way of... filming those docs as well, where he kind of brought people in from a storytelling perspective.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, documentaries are hard to really get out there. So
they are definitely hard to get out there.
Which
for
is
sure.
why they had to kickstart this movie.
Yeah.
Because funding is difficult.
Oh yeah, for this exactly. It would be. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I see where you're coming from. Yeah. I get that. That's why I was actually wondering about this one. I was wondering how the subject would play, just because you never know with a doc, so docs are a little hard. There's only one other doc that I've seen that, I don't know, like if you guys have seen that, also felt really cool from just a storytelling perspective. When I saw Citizen 4, you saw that.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, from a storytelling perspective, because that was just kind of like, it felt like a live story that was happening.
See, I really liked that, but I was interested because I went to see it. I was like, oh, I want to know more about his story and about what's going on.
Yeah.
But you got actual, like, behind the scenes of something that you felt like you shouldn't have come
to
see.
Exactly.
You're like, well, how the fuck did they get this, right, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's... Yeah, that's a cool one. That's the only one I can really think of. But otherwise, it's like, oh, here's docs typically are like just explaining everything to you. And
like an example of like a documentary that I went in blind, really knew nothing about, and then came out just like, I love this movie. And you saw it with me, Zach, which was Man on Wire.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I heard that's really, really
good.
It's so good.
It is. And I've seen the film adaptation of that with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, The Walk.
Never saw that.
I heard it's good, too.
It is really good.
Good.
It's quite good. He did a fantastic job playing Philippe. But the doc, I'll never forget where I was sitting watching it.
You were at film school.
It was just one of those films that, you know... You go in blind, and I was, you know, almost on the verge of tears.
Yeah. I'd say that's the best way to go into some docs sometimes, to just go in blind, because you don't know anything about it, and then it gets explained to you. And you're like, oh, you either latch onto it and it's super interesting, or you're like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. So, like, you'll either hate it, but you'll really love it. But the more you know about it, the more... I feel like the less effective it is.
Yeah, like for example, you and I, Andrew, we saw Fahrenheit 11/9.
We did
recently.
That recent one, yeah.
And it was one of the first times when I left the theater, I was
we were both like that.
I was like, okay. we were like, I knew pretty much everything that this movie has.
Yeah,
covered.
Like why is it?
I think the first thing I said to you when we, or one of the first things I said to you was, because of the political system in the U.S. right now and the news culture right now, I felt like everything in that, none of it was new. All of it was just shoved in our faces throughout the years anyway. So it was no new information. It was just a Michael Moore documentary of it.
Then that's the example of like something that's just information.
But it's nothing new.
It's done. There's nothing. But there wasn't really a story. It was just kind of a sum up of the last year.
If it wasn't for his personality, there wouldn't have been much to the movie. Like his comments, his comedy in a way, it wouldn't have been.
And that's kind of boring, because that's the thing about like, say, the other Michael Moore films at the time. When you watch them, you were learning things. And I think that's the key. If that's the case for that film, then that's a real tragedy, because that's a necessity of his films that you need, or any documentary.
There was
really.
I can pinpoint. There's only one thing in the entire movie that I had not known about, and I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. That's a little. I love that little dig at Barack there, but
I don't remember that.
The thing where he went to Flint and he faked
the
drink.
Oh yeah.
When he says the water's fine, and it's like.
And then people in Flint were like, fuck you.
Yeah. So that was interesting, just seeing that. But everything else was just like,
That I had never paid much attention to be fair. So that was kind of news to me. I was like, oh, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, but that's just like one thing out of like a nearly 2-hour movie.
Yeah, that's kind of brutal. So you're just essentially getting a sum up of what
you
already know.
We weren't super bored. Like, I didn't
Sounds
feel super
boring.
Bored, but I was a little bored.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was there and it was like, oh, I'm like not disconnected.
Yeah.
Not that entertained.
It was the Michael Moore, like, his sense of humor kind of pulls it through. And if you like his sense of humor, then you know,
you'll get something out
of it. But in terms of just like a film that pushes buttons or gets
the facts, my god,
this is the talk of the country.
Yeah.
It's like, what have I not heard that I haven't heard a million times already?
Yeah, he's a little too focused in on, like, because America's just so much on the, like, on the world stage in terms of like people just know shit about America who don't live in America. If you want to actually, I think the point of a doc is to kind of shine a light where it needs to be shined. That's the benefit of a documentary. And he's shining a light on what's already bright as fuck. Everybody can see it. So it's like, what's the point?
Yeah, like something like Blackfish or something is a good example.
Was it called
Blackfish? Yeah, that's the one, the killer whales.
The whales.
Sea World.
Yeah,
the Sea World. It's called Blackfish.
Blackfish. Was a great example. And not only like was it a success and they did do a great job spotlighting it, but then it had an impact on SeaWorld. Yeah. And now they've since, like, haven't they, like, already gotten rid of, like,
yeah, it's cool to see that. I mean, like, even Super Size Me had that at the time.
Super Size Me was, like, a big success.
Yeah, well, and at the time, it actually had real-world impact on those companies because they were like, we need to dial this shit back, we need to be healthier, whatever, to, like, you know, mostly the image they had to manage, but, you know, it did force them to make some changes.
Yeah.
Right? So
the changes it made me make when they played it at my high school.
Fucking ate
I get to bring, we all brought some McDonald's in class.
Yeah. Funny guy.
McDonald's.
Funny guy. Yeah. Quiet rebellion.
Yeah. I don't know. Some of the best docs that I've seen are not ones that are released into theaters. They're kind of like released on certain like networks or channels.
Netflix ones.
Well, yeah. Netflix ones, yeah. But one example I like to bring up is ESPN's 30 for 30.
That's a good series.
Which, if anyone's who hasn't seen it,
Space Jam.
I saw that. That was amazing. They pick like a particular sports story and then they do a doc on that. Except they're really well made. And because of they have the 30 for 30 brand, you can do anything and then you can find an amazing story out of something you're like, I don't give two shits about college basketball in the 1970s. But then when you start watching, you go, oh my God. Yeah. And
just
you,
the way they tell it.
And how like, oh my
good
God,
story.
This is Goodfellas, man. They brought in the Goodfellas shit, you know, shaving points off and it's Henry Hill. Holy crap. That's amazing. Yeah. Or like,
it's just a good story.
Yeah.
That's what the best docs are like. Just really great stories, like real life stories.
Yeah,
right?
One that I can bring up, I forget the. I think it's like called June. I think it's like 20th, 1994. The date might be wrong, but it was about what happened throughout this one day in the world of sports, and it was all circling around when OJ was on the run.
Oh yeah,
and how everything broke to that story.
Yeah,
of
there
the
was
white
the
Bronco.
Basketball finals.
It
right?
was the NBA Knicks versus I forget who they played against in the finals.
Yeah, it was,
and then that same day, the New York Rangers had their Stanley Cup parade. That same day, someone in the U.S. Open was winning the golf tournament, and so forth and so forth. And then all of a sudden, OJ. And then all you cut back from all the stations. There was like no narration, no nothing. It was just showing flipping channels throughout this whole hour and a half or hour long movie of chronicling the insanity of that day.
Yeah.
On that
in sports
and just around the world, and how all of a sudden this one event just rippled everywhere.
Yeah.
It's fascinating just seeing where like the world was at that point.
The juice spilt, man.
Oh wow, that's actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's not bad.
That's actually pretty good, man. I don't think I've ever heard that before. Yeah,
that's right. Juice spilt.
Approved.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should have a sound effect. Zach made a good pun. Ding ding ding.
Yes.
Just that stab sound.
I don't know. We won't need to use it very often.
I still want to get that painting I saw in the club in Edmonton. The one with the glove with OJ. That was one of the best things I've ever seen. I was at some club and they had this random like painting of OJ with like the glove and stuff.
Is
and
it
like,
captioned "If I did it"?
No, it was. what's the quote? Acquit.
Oh, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
That's what it was.
Johnny.
That's
Parker.
Worse.
Yeah. And he's just like, oh, like that's hilarious.
God.
Like. And it's just like in this club, like people are drinking and dancing. They get this random like painting.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
In Edmonton.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Well, it's like we were just at, I was at Vegas with you, Rylan, and there was, in our hotel, there was the monkey bar.
Yeah.
And it was just a bar full of paintings and photos of monkeys and tuxedos.
In immaculate suits.
Yes. And
I love it. I love it.
It's called the Monkey Bar.
It's great. Monkey Town.
Yeah. That's the Las Vegas. Anyone wants to check that out? It's a good joint. I didn't drink there, but, you know, I walked by it.
And I believe it's Tokyo, or, like, just outside of Tokyo, there's an actual, like, monkey bar.
Oh, cool.
Where, like, you can actually get monkeys to, like, bring you food and, like, that drinks and
that's
stuff.
That's not unethical at all.
But it's hilarious.
Are they also wearing lipstick, or?
And they got, like, little uniforms and stuff,
oh,
too.
Oh, that's getting even better.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Just a bit of housekeeping on the movie, actually. There's one other thing I noticed at the end of that. They're like, oh, Jonathan Blow, because he's kind of like, oh, the past. Like, they're just saying, oh, he's something that happened. There's a success story that already happened. He's like, oh, he's working on his next game, The Witness, set to release in 2012. That game came out. It didn't come out in 2012, not even fucking close. It came out in, like, 2015? It came out years after that. Mm. So it was for sure delayed. I don't know the story behind the development of that game, but it was funny to see, like, oh, The Witness, 2012, slated to come out that year. I was like, what the fuck? No, that came out, like, not that long ago. But it was critically really well received.
It was witnessed in 2015.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway... It's another puzzle game. It was really successful. Jonathan Blow has been accused of being really pretentious in general, and that never stopped. I think that's just the way the guy is. He's wired to be that way. So,
well, that's fine. Yeah. Like, each artist has got to have their own voice, and if they come off as pretentious, then own it. Just like, you know what? It's getting people talking. It's getting people's attention. So, just
well, his
work
game's
with
really
it.
Good. Like, his games have been really good. I haven't played The Witness, but I've heard really good things. It's just, I don't know. I don't have time to play everything.
In the end, it's all about that change.
And yeah, man. And if anybody has a problem with it, they can go blow themselves.
Exactly.
That's great. That's great. Anyway.
Ding, ding, ding.
I guess we'll
be here all night.
I guess we'll just sum up a bit, or yeah, you can say if you think it's underrated or just a comment you have about it, whatever you want to say, actually, just sum up. Before that, there's one thing I forgot to mention as well, is that in terms of numbers for this film, it's super hard to track. There are no numbers because it wasn't traditionally released. It was released primarily through digital distribution. So a lot of it was Kickstarter people who had already invested in it, and they got the movie so they didn't have to like pay for it after the fact because they supported it up front. They toured the movie, so when I initially saw it, I actually saw it in theaters one time. So they did tour it, but it wasn't like a regular, you couldn't like, it didn't play like a whole day at a theater or anything like that. It was toured around and it had a bit of a theatrical release. Sorry, I think it was like an event theatrical release where it would release on like a day or whatever at a certain time, and then they toured it as well. And they actually they have a whole breakdown of how they distributed the film as like an experiment. And they did most of their sales through digital distribution, like a vast, vast, vast majority of it. And in terms of theatrical release, the tour was far more successful than the actual theatrical release.
Well, because you can treat it like a music tour, you know. You build your audience, come for one time only, come here, and you know, it is a risky thing to do, because that's how some films used to do it, like that through road shows, you know, getting high price tickets for one screening only, and that's how you can make your money back. Kevin Smith tried that with Red State not too long ago, to mixed results, but at least it depends on the film and how you push it. And nowadays you kind of have to get creative, because some of the old ways of getting out there in every artistic media is changing constantly. Some people, that some things that are very lucrative are now kind of like not as, you know, lucrative anymore. You know, look at the music industry, you know, look at the 70s, 80s and 90s, they were selling vinyls and records and up the ass, and now it's like, okay, it's a little different now. You're now making money through sponsorships and merchandise and tours. No longer through really record sales anymore. So, and same with films. Now, you know, you got digital distribution, streaming and all that. It's like, you know, these films are not really showing what they're making. And for decades now, films were judged on how well they did box office wise. It used to never be like that. It used to be, oh, it made this much, great. But now they started ranking them and started comparing them. And now all of a sudden it's like, you know, with Netflix coming out and not releasing how well film actually does on their channel, old school ways of like,
still, like gauging
success. they're like, what, you can't be a part of our club because you're not doing everything that we did or we're doing, so therefore, you know, again, just politics and how things used to be run. And to me, it's just like, it's just the changing of times. You gotta find out new ways sometimes,
you know. This movie, had it been released years later, like, you know, 3-4 years later, it would have been a Netflix movie for sure, distribution wise. It's just because it came out in the early Netflix streaming era, like right around House of Cards, I'd say. When did House of Cards come out? 2012?
I feel like that's about right, because it's what, season 7? 6?
Yeah, six.
Six.
So it's one of those things where it just came out way too early for that. So for them it was like a new thing, this like digital distribution stuff like that, but nowadays they would have just been just picked up by Netflix and distributed no problem. I think the next thing that they put out, which kind of give an update to a lot of this stuff at the end of the film, that came out on Netflix, I believe, or at least I've seen it on Netflix.
There's so The avenues for artists to get their media out is just, it's overwhelming now. There's so many different avenues and directions you can take.
Well, the same thing that happened in gaming with digital distribution is happening in film too.
It's happening everywhere, and people need to figure out a way how to just make it work for everyone instead of trying to hold on to old ways of doing things because that's what they're comfortable with. You know, or that's just how they just don't want to change stuff, and that's how things slow down, or that's how certain new things can just fall apart because of old ways. Just, you know, people don't like change, man. It's so things can't get done because this tradition, you don't do this. It's like, I hate people who say it's because of traditions. Like, no, just, I don't like traditions. Traditions should be a dirty word now, because it holds things back.
Dang.
Christmas traditions, bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, these Christmas traditions that we hold so dear, they were like nothing like they, like even 100 years ago. How we see Christmas is night and day to how it was in the 1800s or in the 1700s, and we act like it's always been this way. It's like, no, it hasn't. Things are constantly evolving, constantly changing. It's never not going to stop changing. Nothing's ever going to be a status quo. Status quo is a myth, you know.
Besides Jack's War on Christmas. what are your final thoughts on the movie?
I'm against Christmas as well. I'm against the war on Christmas. This whole idea of there being a war on Christmas.
I know, it's so stupid.
Bill O'Reilly came up with.
Fuck him.
Fuck him.
You know, I think
Christmas
we all
is so fucking subjective, right? It's what you take and how you feel about Christmas. There's so many parts of the world that don't give a fuck about your idea of Christmas.
Santa wasn't red until Coca-Cola drew it.
Remember Megyn Kelly saying, okay, kids, Santa is white. Get over it.
She said that on Fox News.
Isn't she fired or something?
Not for that.
Santa isn't real. No,
but
she's fired. Get over
but she,
it.
She
it
got fired for thing. She got fired for saying, hey, I thought, you know, I grew up in blackface was not a big deal.
Like, you could dress up as
anything, and it's
whatever,
not racist.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, how fucking naive and stupid can you sound?
It's still racist. Maybe it wasn't considered racist back then, but it still was.
I could, like, just because there were cartoons in the 40s and 30s having characters shoot each other in the face does not mean it was okay.
Yeah.
It was just like, it's just, that's history, but we have to acknowledge that does not fly, and that's a little messed up. Today, that doesn't mean we ignore it or just like, hey, it was fine then. That means I can do it today. It's like, no. Again, status quo is a myth.
Yeah.
That should be a t-shirt.
Status bro.
Status bro.
Oh, my God.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think this was a really good documentary to bring in. I think. I don't know that, and I'm going to, I've said pretentious things on this podcast before that should be put into a bag and then just dumped on me at the end of the year. Like, you are stupid and here's why. But I'm gonna say something else that's dumb. I don't know that people who love video games would sit down and watch this for an hour and 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. I think they should, though.
They did.
I think there's
they supported
a lot
it
of people.
And stuff.
Oh, good.
And yeah.
Good.
Yeah. They were the I would say the gaming audience is the one that came out for this.
Good.
Yeah.
I think it deserves a lot more attention than what it currently has. Like, yeah. Yes, it would have gotten onto Netflix had it been made in 2015. Yes. It should have been on the IFC when it came out, like the Independent Film Channel.
That's a good call.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great call. Yeah. That's a great call.
It should maybe...
It's Canadian film, too, by the way.
Yeah,
so that's a, absolutely. That's a, it's rare that you get, like, a cool, like, Canadian doc like that, like, where it's tackling something that's, like, pretty, like, primarily... Like, those were all mostly American developers except for Phil. So, yeah. Like, it, you know, they're covering game development, which is much bigger in the U.S. than it is in Canada. So, mm-hmm. It's cool to see that.
Yeah, not that I'm super well-versed in Canadian docs, but they seem to be more about Canadian, or, like, mainly Canadian issues when they do exist.
Because that's all the funding they can get. Telecanada won't give out grants unless there has something Canadian involved.
Yeah, it was just CRTC regulations. It was just Phil. Phil was the only Canadian developer there. So, but yeah, they focused on him quite a bit. But the big one, Super Meat Boy, kind of being the present.
Yeah.
Thing, mm-hmm. They're super American, those guys. But like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool that they focused in on that issue. Like Canadian developers were like, no, we're super passionate about games.
Yeah.
But that makes sense because Quebec gives a fuck ton
of
grants for games and like independent stuff.
Oh, yeah. A lot of this, like Quebec and BC are like kind of like the top two provinces when it comes to game developing.
Yeah.
By a country mile. Like it's a lot of it's focused on, and they do great work. You know, there's a lot of great shit that comes out from both places for sure.
Yeah. Big time.
In terms of documentaries, there are a lot of documentaries out there.
Oh yeah.
Oh good Lord. Nah. I think this one is in the sea of documentary films. I think this one does rank on the underrated side of things. And just like Jack, and I've said this before, that I love the behind-the-scenes stuff as well.
Yeah.
I love the technical and the craft working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot more people should see this because people need to understand the stresses of bringing entertainment to the masses. Like, this is a huge issue that more people need to know about. The comments that those game developers were getting... I think it was Phil who was getting it. Why hasn't it been released yet? Seriously, you should die. Those people, that's like first world meme kind of stupid shit. Like, you don't own the game. The game is not specifically for you. Yes, you're going to play it, but you're not a stock. You're not an investor in the game. Like, just let it go. When it comes out, it'll come out. Just have patience.
Yeah.
There are more important things in the world to worry about. And just let people do what they're going to do. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. Final cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very important. And it doesn't always happen in film, but with developers, especially indie developers, they get, I think, more of that creative control.
Yeah.
And you see that here.
Yeah.
But although the stresses are still there. So very good pick. I do think it's underrated. I think it should be seen by more people. And we should do a little bit of a push, just as a nod to the people who made this film on our pages saying, hey, you guys should see this.
Yeah. Those filmmakers are really good, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought they did a really good job with the doc, like the structure of it. So it's cool. Yeah. And they're indie. They're indie themselves, right? They mm-hmm. were kickstarted. So
yeah,
totally. Yeah. They were had their own vision and they went with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But what about you, Jack? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, honestly, this is you've been on a good roll with picking movies, at least for me, there, Andrew. I've enjoyed a lot of the films you've picked out so far, like immensely, and this is another one. I think this is, you know, we're talking about how like there's the Roger Eberts out there who were anti is video game art or anything like that. This is the kind of movie where you should show to those naysayers or those people who are just on their pedestal and high and mighty, who sticks up their asses. They need to watch stuff like this just to show that it's no different than making a movie, creating a song, or painting a picture. Video games is just another step in terms of incorporating all of those facets into one. And that's the beauty about, art has been a evolving, form of art, for lack of a better word. It starts with, drawing something, writing something, then performing something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the limits, you think that's your limit, but then all of a sudden you add a camera and you can all of a sudden move your still pictures and create movement in art and all that, and how, you know, the fluttering of a wind and the movement of a camera can express so much meaning and thought-provoking ideas. And then when you add video game, it adds that...
To make it interactive.
Interactiveness. And that's the key difference. You know, I'm always curious, what's the next evolution of...
VR.
Well, I wouldn't say VR, but it's like, it's what's the... That's just putting it, just looking at it. It's just like, what's the next step of evolution of interactive art, interactive media? And just people who try and hold back on it, it just makes no sense to me. It's just like, hey, just, we should... always try and strive for, you know, better art and
more
pushing it. Yeah, like, don't just hold back just because this doesn't meet your requirements of art. It's like,
yeah.
Don't you want to, like, you start with Mario and yeah, you're like, oh, this is just pixelated dog shit or something like that, as a Nacer would say. But then from there, then you go to Red Dead Redemption 2 and just see the evolution of where the media and the craft has come. It's like, that needs to continue. Same with filmmaking, same with music and all that. You just need to continue pushing the media,
it's
pushing
the thing,
things
though.
Evolve.
Like, and even the development story behind Super Mario, like the original.
Oh, I know, but it's crazy.
Super fucking cool.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the fact, the structure they had to meet, like, their story of getting that to the masses is super cool. And that level design, you look at it, like, they talk about you need to communicate with the player to teach them everything they need to know with one simple, without a text box or whatever. Nintendo pioneered that with Super Mario. That first level teaches you everything you need to know about the game.
Yep.
Right away. It's genius level design. And like, that's such a cool way of communicating, right? At the end of the day. Yeah, it's not like making a fucking profound emotional statement that comes later, but it's still in its own way an achievement in communication.
Yeah.
But
and then
anyway.
And then the one thing, I'll say the one in terms of the emotional beat in this film that connected with me the most was near the end when he was saying, when he was reflecting on, you know, Super Meatball, which by the way was like one
Super
of the
Meat Boy.
Super Meat Boy. Meat Boy. It's
Super
Meat Boy. Yeah. It's a meatball.
Meatball.
I eat the Super Meatball in Europa.
Gorlami. Gorlami.
All right.
Yeah. Anyways, I was about to say that was actually the only game I had heard of. I was very aware of that game. I had heard about it.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, cool. They were going to talk about this game. Everything else, I was just like, I've never heard of it, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
But it was when he was reflecting how, like, you know, if this is going to, you know, this, seeing all the fan drawings and them reacting on it, it's like, hey, I used to do this with Mario and look where I am, and just thinking that, you know, what I'm doing now and two kids are going to see this and like, oh, two guys, I can do this and all that.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's in the end what art needs to be in the end, is just to inspire others to create more art.
Yeah.
And to express themselves, because that's what art in the end does, is an expression of one's inner thoughts and inner self.
Yeah.
And more people need to do that, because I feel like too many people hold in their thoughts, hold in their fears, their ambitions, because they're afraid of what people are going to think about it and how they're going to react to it. And to me, we need more encouragement to get out there. We need to express ourselves more. And video games is just another way of doing that. And that scene alone is like, yeah, that's in the end, that's what you want to do. You got to lay the groundwork for other people to continue laying the groundwork in the future. You know, it's like, if I'm going to make the best movie of all time and no one's ever going to top it since then we should stop making movies.
Yeah.
If we're not going to try and beat it, you know, every record should be strived to get broken. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
So no, this one really connected to me on an emotional level. I do think it's highly underrated in terms of documentaries. And say with video games, I think this is almost, there's a lot of backlash and criticism with the video game world and development, whether it's with a Gamergate or anything like that. This is something that I feel like is needed to kind of add, hey, it's not just this toxic world. It's a lot of heart and it's a lot of sweat and soul put into, you know, art. And if we, you know, focus too much on, you know, the little nitty gritty or the little bullshit politics, then we can lose sight of, you know,
the creative process.
And to me, that I love seeing, you know, art coming to life. To me, that's the satisfying part as an artist, is just seeing it come to life and actually And when it comes to exactly how you want it to be, it's nothing more satisfying than that. So overall, I thought this was fantastic. Definitely, if you love video games or if you just like any sort of artistic ambitions being sought out and pursued, check this out for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Rylan, final thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure quite how to follow up that elaborate spiel.
Break the record. you can top me.
Just say Soldier Boy.
look at this little guy in the suit.
Yeah.
I wonder if Soldier Boy will approve of this podcast in the same way.
I hope so.
I wouldn't mind. I'd see that as a compliment.
He should come as a guest. I'd love Soldier Boy.
Featuring Soldier Boy.
Featuring Soldier
Why
Boy.
Am I featuring Soldier Boy?
Let Soldier Boy make fun of us all he wants. I think it's great.
Totally.
this is a really cool little film. It's not the first time that we've watched something on this show that's a love letter to diving into your passions and creating and making something in spite of all the odds. So, I mean, I love the type of energy and that kind of reaffirmation of the importance ultimately of that mentality to the sociocultural artistic landscape of our world. So, this is an excellent addition to that. I did want to, you talked about the music at first. I thought that was really cool as well. I think probably the closest thing I've heard score-wise would be Bear McCready's score for the Angry Video Game Nerd movie.
Oh, yeah.
Highly underrated. That music is fan-fucking-tastic. It is the
best. It kind of reminded me of that a little bit. Like, more subdued, but...
No, and those
it was really cool.
Those films were actually... that was shot in 2012, too, so it's funny how 2012, 2013 was almost kind of like a...
It doesn't feel like that long ago.
I know. It doesn't feel that long ago, but it's also... You kind of forget, like, oh, wow, this is actually kind of a big year in the gaming industry, because that was also the start of the new generation, was around 2012, too. So, 2012, 2013 was a kind of like a monumental year in the history of gaming. Mm. And, you know.
Yeah, it had a lot of, like, big end-of-cycle releases, like GTA 5 and Last of Us and stuff like that. So you had some pretty big moments for games, like even the larger games. So it was an interesting time for gaming. Yeah, but if you're at all interested in like Jim Guthrie's music, there's actually, like, I think his best music is in a game called it was actually, I think they showed a clip of it in the movie. Yeah, they did, for sure. It is Sword and Sorcery. It's a mobile game. It's awesome. It is really good narrative. And you should play. They recommend you play with headphones, and there's a reason, because Jim Guthrie's music is fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're at all interested, it's a mobile game. You know, not hard to actually play on the go or whatever, on the bus or something.
I think my personal favorite video game, just a side topic, my personal favorite video game soundtrack, because it's the only one that keeps coming to my head, is the original Red Dead Redemption soundtrack.
Very good. Very good.
So good.
A lot of the Rockstar ones, to be honest, are really awesome, but Last of Us is really fucking good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
I still need to play that a second time.
Yeah, but I like Bastion. That's another indie game that's fucking got us ridiculously good soundtrack and game and story and everything. Like, that's my that's a good indie game you guys should play.
I almost got that on Steam.
It's so good. I highly recommend it.
It's on the list.
Yeah, you should play it. It's not long, but it's really good. It's got a narrator and everything, and the narrator responds to your actions and stuff and narrates according. So, dude, anyway.
Cool.
Zach, sum up.
So I think definitely if you're a big into video games, you know, you're into the industry, or you're just, you know, mad for them games, I think you should definitely check this out. It's definitely underrated in that sense. And I think, honestly, even if you're not, I mean, you know, Rylan, you know, and things like that, like, they're not super into video games or anything like that, yet they still really enjoy it. I think it's definitely underrated, I think, for, you know, people who are not super into video games as well. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's underrated, even though I wasn't, like, crazy about it.
Yeah.
I would say it's underrated, considering that you said this was kickstarted. Like, it wasn't really started up by anybody but fans.
No, it was very, like, ground level.
Yeah. Kind of thing. And I never really heard about it until you mentioned it, so.
Yeah, it didn't get this, like, crazy wide release or anything.
So I would say it's underrated based on that, because it probably didn't really make anything And
hard to tell, like, because they distributed it themselves, like, so I'm not sure what the overhead is on
it. Probably wasn't a lot, which is probably why, you know, there's not really any numbers, because it was released digitally and they toured it, so it's hard to kind of have official numbers.
They did the festival circuit as well, actually. It did go to Sundance and it won something at Sundance, so it, like, it did that. But in terms of like a traditional release, not really.
I would say it's underrated. Just again, because I had never heard of it, and there's definitely things you can get out of it for sure, and especially if you're into video games, I would say go for it.
If you're interested in what it takes to create the things that you play as somebody who plays video games, I agree. Because it definitely behind the scenes kind of look at how Soldier hard Blade. That shit is.
So I think any creative person can get something out of this, because it can relate to the labors of love that it that is required for any sort of creation.
I was wondering about that, because you guys all, like, I wasn't sure how you guys would receive it, but I could see that as well, because you can just kind of relate to the work, the creative work that it takes. So pretty cool. And for somebody who's not a part of that, you get to kind of see that and appreciate the work.
And also, good to see, like, other people suffering the same things that you've suffered through. It's like, okay, we're all just together.
If you guys are at all interested in the creative process or video games and what goes into them, I'd say it's definitely worth checking out too. So that's it for this time. Mm-hmm. And who's next week?
Alex.
Who's next? Alex?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm always interested in Alex's picks. I think for me, he's been one of the most consistent, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think I know his next movie. It's going to be Vanilla Ice.
Cool as Ice.
Oh, Cool as Ice?
Yeah, Cool as Ice. Yeah, and then Steven Spielberg was like, I need that cinematographer. I need him.
I need him for Schindler's List.
Yeah, and literally that's what he did. And he got him on board.
He goes from Cool as Ice to Schindler's List. And he hasn't looked back.
I love that. And he becomes this guy.
That makes sense, because Cool as Ice was 92, if I remember correctly. And then Schindler's List was 93.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
So funny.
Any sneak peek, Alex?
So I'm going to break from my usual political, societal, media criticism.
Yeah, break the ice.
I'm going to do something completely different just for this time around.
Okay.
Because we kind of, you know, glossed over most of October.
Okay, I know the genre.
I'm interested. Yeah, so I can't wait. And until next time, Zach, you got something stupid to say?
Soldier boy up in the hole.
Soldier boy! Look at him in that suit. Look at him fall. Look at him rewind.
This is what we need to address here. We talk about our social media. We need to start kickstarting the Soldier Boy review show. Review that hoe. That's what he's got to do.
All right. So, Zach, that's enough. Till next time. You missed it.